Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple hours, we're going to talk about cars, and you're always welcome to join us. There's no specific time that's not good. Right now is fine. We got five lines, and you're welcome to join us. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm really good with disagreements between me and my brother, me and my wife, me and my dad, me and my mother, all that kind of stuff. I'm really good at that, as long as you represent both sides appropriately. And there's a key word there, appropriately. So, and any kind of questions about you've been told about your car, maybe your newer model car and you're a little confused about, then I'm your guy. 602-508-0960. As most of you know, I have a list of the best car repair shops in the valley, and that's on my website, marksalem.com. I don't take that responsibility lightly. Let me explain. I have a promise to you that if you have a problem with one of my shops and an independent arbitrator decides that the shop should either make another repair or give you money back and the shop doesn't, two things happen. Number one, I kick them off the list, and number two, I'll do it. Up to $5,000, which is going to cover a lot of transmissions and stuff like that. So if you have a problem, then if the shop won't do it, then my promise to you is that I will. One time since 1988 have we come close, and then the shop decided to see it my way. One time. It's never happened. So Blackwell Automotive up on Greenway and 40th Street is just like that. I've known Palm for a lot of years, like I know all the shop owners. If you have a hot rod you're thinking about restoring, or if you've got a particular car that you're having a tough time with, or you've got a problem that no one can seem to identify or fix, then Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway would be the guy that you'd go talk to and see what it is that he has to offer. But he has the tenacity of a police dog. He has the brains of Einstein, and he has the amount of hair as a cue ball. And I think that pretty much draws the picture I'm interested in drawing for you. When it comes to car repair, the hard part is that you don't know who to believe. So I have an easy answer for you. Believe your owner's manual. That's all. The owner's manual dictates the improper maintenance for your car. To deviate from your owner's manual is not necessarily a good idea unless there's a problem. For instance, your coolant may not be cycled or replaced, flushed and replaced. Let's pretend 100,000 miles. At 70, you end up with a water pump that's leaking. So now's the time to do that coolant flush for this reason. We're already there. So all we have to do is we take the water pump off, we put a new one on, we flush out the cooling system, drain the water, 50-50 mix, we put it in. Well, it's all part of the oil change, or actually the water pump change. So other than the coolant cost, and sometimes that's already in the water pump bid, there really is no difference. Just go ahead and rinse out the inside of the motor, which is really what a flush is all about. Drain the water, put a 50-50 mix of coolant in it, you're done. So that's kind of how the owner's manual works. There's a lot of places throughout the United States, and certainly in Arizona as well, that have the 995 oil change. And you know, and I know, and everybody in the world knows, that that is an opportunity for us to sell you something. So the 995 doesn't even pay for the oil. 995 barely pays for the filter. Then you've got labor, and you've got all this other. So the idea is when you come in, hopefully we'll be able to sell you a injector flush, an engine flush, a tailpipe flush, and I'm using a lot of flush words because that's the one that drives me the craziest. We're going to flush your air conditioning system. We're going to flush your air filter. We're going to do all this flushing, but really it's all about flushing your wallet. It has everything to do with selling you something, and that apparently we hope it appears that we're looking out for your best interest, and we're going to do something that's going to save you money in the long run. So that may happen sometimes, but I think you can draw the distinction between a sales process and, hey, you got steel hanging out of your right rear tire. You need to replace at least that tire, and so I just want to bring it to your attention. Come over here and I'll show you. That's quite different than somebody who says we need to flush your injectors and you'll love us and your car will love you and it'll never break down. Okay, there's a difference there. most of the people in our industry are good people. Recently, we've had some big investment firms come in and buy a variety of chain stores in town. So there's two or three, if I mentioned their names, that you would recognize that are going to be under new ownership. The whole purpose of buying a slew of auto repair shops is to drive the volume up, drive the profits up, and then turn around and sell them. So I don't think it takes a genius to figure out that those kinds of facilities that are now asked to increase sales by 20%, 30%, 50%, that you're not going to be a victim of someone attempting to sell you something that you probably don't need. But again, your defense, your self-defense for car expense is the owner's manual. You can also say to them, you know what, let me go out to the car and get the owner's manual, and can you show me where it says that I need new spark plugs and I need you to flush my fuel injectors at 50,000 miles? Because it isn't in there at 50,000 miles. And they'll come up with an excuse why they won't walk out to your car and show you. It's the same way with fluids. Keep in mind that in years past, and I started in 1968, and I was a kid at a gas station. Back then, we did all the fluids at like 15. And then after we get into the 80s, we were 30,000 miles. So all the liquids in your car at 30. And then we morphed a little north of that. But today, virtually everything is 100. So brake fluid, transmission fluid, coolant, differential, transfer case, front differential, all those fluids, almost all are north of 100 in 95% of the cars out there. So just keep that in mind when it comes to fluids. And in fluids, I would suggest that you kind of use common sense. I want you to change the fluid in my differentials, but I'll bring it in and the fluid's already warm. So I drove down the freeway 10 miles. I turned around and came back 10 miles. And so can I have my appointment at 10 and you be ready for me at 10? So you've warmed up the fluid. That's going to be a better drain than trying to drain molasses that is set there overnight. Small stuff, but just beneficial. You can decide for yourself what you want to do. The call is 602-508-0960, and we have a caller. We're going to do what we're supposed to do, and that's take the caller. Who's that, Gil?
That would be Jack.
Jack, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Hey, I got a question. I'm looking to buy a used car, and I'm seeing these cars that are all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive versus just front-wheel drive. And I'm wondering, in a fairly dry climate, why I need a four-wheel drive car. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, obviously you have conventionally the front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive, and unless you're going to go into an environment that has snow or mud or low traction for longer than a blink of an eye or a second, or I got to go to the cabin in Flagstaff and the roads are going to be fine, but I'm going to have to drive in my driveway 35 feet and it's likely to have 8 inches of snow on it. If I were that person, I wouldn't get anything different. Low traction is what this is all about. So an all-wheel drive is a very expensive add-on. All-wheel drive, you blow one tire, you replace all four, because we need the tire to have the same circumference on all corners of the all-wheel drive.
So yeah, that was my other question. I've heard that same thing, too, and it just seems crazy that you'd have to replace all four, but that's the way it really is?
Yeah. My wife was making a U-turn in a gas station, and she's driving a Tahoe, and it's got 20-inch tires on it, and she hits the curb, which means she pinches the tire between the curb and the wheel. It promptly cuts the tire, and I'm looking at the tire, and that tire's 30% worn, and the rest of them are virtually new. So I could put a new one on there, and I think that's what we did, because the tires were a week old, a month old. But if the tire was at 50%, how am I going to buy another 50% tire? And
right.
I need
it's
all of them. And then think about inflation. Not inflation with respect to cost, but inflation of the tire. You have to keep track of the inflation. So if one's 35, they all better be 35, because that's going to change the diameter and the circumference of the tire. So, you know, Colorado spends a lot of money on all-wheel drives for obvious reasons. The low-traction places that have a lot of rain. it seems like that there's a particular segment of society that likes all-wheel drive, and perhaps maybe they think it's a status symbol. I don't, but I know people who do. So I think it's more a matter of what kind of car do you want and what how do you going to drive the car. If you're not going to go on a dirt road 5 miles to your cabin up on the rim, then I'm suggesting a front-wheel drive or a two-wheel drive car would be the appropriate thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. You see a lot of high-end cars like the Audis or even Hondas or Toyotas have this all-wheel drive, but people have to drive those in the city on paved roads probably 99% of the time.
Yeah.
But they buy them and these companies sell them, so I'm missing something there, why they're so important to have.
Well, it's you know, oh, gosh darn it, Jack. This is a high-performance car. We need power to all four wheels. When you go into a turn and you're chasing a bank robber who just snatched a young 5-year-old son, and you're chasing him and you go around, you don't want the butt end to slide out from underneath you. You want all four of those tires looking like the paws of a panther. And so okay. This is the kind of car that you want. How did I do?
You did great.
Did I sell you?
Really good. Oh, yeah. I'm going to chase bank robbers the rest of the week.
Now, my wife's Tahoe was an all-wheel drive, It didn't have the ability for us to disconnect the front axle because that's two-wheel, four-wheel. So if we can have the option of two-wheel and four-wheel. Her Tahoe, but we also were in low traction conditions. Sometimes we drove it out on a dirt road and we were hauling horses or whatever. So there was a reason for that. But in reality, she liked the white one. And she liked the interior, and it just happened to have an all-wheel drive. So you're smart enough to know that I'm not going to argue with that. Neither are you.
Oh, yeah. No. The wife gets what she wants.
Yeah.
Well, so I noticed that the all-wheel drives, though, have a little bit less mileage than the two-wheel or the front-wheel drives, but that must be okay because you're chasing bank robbers. You don't care about mileage.
You're exactly right. I'll give you the analogy. Your wife is slim and trim, yours, and so she rides the bicycle and everything's fine. But if she puts her big, husky husband on the bike with her, it's a little extra work and a little bit. So if you're turning four tires and two differentials and a transfer case, you're going to lose a little bit of get up and go, but you're going to lose a little fuel economy because the load's bigger and deeper. So that's the reason why.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, thank you.
All righty. Thank you, Jack. 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open. We have 602-508-0960. And ladies, if you want to, you can call and give your husband's name and give me your male husky voice and pretend you're like your husband, and then I'll settle that argument for you. We'll be right back. Well, when it comes to car repair shops, let me tell you about Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He's been around since JC visited the earth. They've been around. They're really good and smart. Bob and Jeremy are the greatest technicians. They really know what they're doing. And one of the things they offer to you is when you're being told that you need to flush this, flush that, you need to change your windshield wiper fluid, you need to do all this fancy stuff, the question you ask is, what symptom do I have now that you're going to fix? So you want to flush my injectors, but tell me, what do I have now that's going to go away when you flush my injectors? And the answer to that is impossible to answer. All you can do is look like a deer in the headlights and come up with some stupid answer. Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. I'm proud to recommend them. Brad, good morning. You're first. What can I do for you?
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. Hey, I have, in regards to your previous caller just a second ago, I got an idea we could make lots of money with.
Okay.
And it would be to develop a tire truing machine. You throw that tire, you measure the tire, the one that's below us, then you can throw it on this machine and true up those tires to the other one. There you go.
I think in the 70s we'd have done that in a heartbeat. So I'm going to take a set of Michelins and I'm going to, or Toyos or Bridgestones or whatever, I'm not going to grind off 15% of those because I've just voided the warranty, And if the tire fails and somebody dies, then I'm going to be the last one to touch it. And I did something that's completely outside of industry standards. But nevertheless, send me an email and you and I will do that as a business. Okay.
There you go. There you go.
Thank you. Thank you, Brad. And, thank you very much.
Yeah. Speaking of tires, I know that you started in the industry young. The memory just came up. I worked for Yellow Front back in the day. That, you know, a store back here in Phoenix. I don't know if you remember those.
I do.
But we sold tires at one point from China, which was a new thing for us, and they actually had wood shavings in the tire.
You're right. I've heard that story. I've never personally seen that. But long ago, we had lots of products from China, and it wasn't a big deal. Obviously, in yours and my lifetime, it has. But anyway, thank you, Brad. Thank you for calling. John, you're up next. How can I help you?
Mark, I have a 04 Chevrolet Silverado. It's got 190,000 miles on it, and I'm using a gallon and a half of water a week or in 5 days, and I have no clue where it's going.
This is really easy. Let me ask you a couple questions. When you drive it for a while and then you park it and you start it up, is there any possibility that it's missing and then all of a sudden after the count of five it mysteriously clears up and idles good and runs good?
Yes.
Okay. Whenever we have a cooling system, we want it to be airtight, and the cooling system is typically wrapped around the cylinder, head gasket, the head, the block, all that stuff. So if we have a coolant leak within the engine and it goes into the cylinder, that cylinder has water in it. So it's not going to hit until we get the water out. So I've given you a specific set of symptoms, and you said yes. I know you're telling me the truth, because if it wasn't true, you go, I don't even know what you're talking about. So here's the deal. We would pressurize the cooling system. On my industry, should pressurize the cooling system when it's warm. And then we're going to let it sit for a couple hours, and then we're going to pull all the spark plugs out of it, we're going to crank it over, and one of those spark plug holes is going to be puking some water. Then we have to go figure out if the head's broken or if the head gasket's compromised or something like that. Most likely we have a head gasket problem. And in that case, at 190,000 miles, I probably just pull the head off and get the head gasket fixed. But I do have something to offer you. There is a chemical that has a process that's very specific. I'm not going to tell anybody what it is, because people call back and say, it didn't work. Well, that's because you didn't follow the directions. Us guys don't follow directions. You have to follow the directions exactly like they're written. So it's like $125, $150. It's a complete treatment. And with the exception of one vehicle, this has been 99% successful for us. Now, if it doesn't work, we'll give you all your money back. So if we end up with, we're going to have some antifreeze, the treatment, and then the stop leak, we'll give you all your money back. So we're that convinced that it's a good thing. What part of town do you live in?
Moon Valley, okay. North Phoenix.
Okay. If you were to go to Kurtz, I could probably share that information with him. Here's why I'm stingy. It's because all my life I've looked for a sealer. An engine stop leak, a cooling system stop leak that works. And I'm not willing to give up 25, 30 years of hunting for nothing. So I'll tell Kurtz. So if you want to try, now he may not want to do it because he says, you know, I don't have the experience Salem has. We're down on Warner and I-10. So, but that's something you can wait for, but you might as well bring a book because you're going to be there 2 or 3 hours.
One thing I wanted to ask you, I did a compression check on that motor, and they all ran at 120, and one ran at 125. Would that cause a compression to go down, having a leak like that?
Not necessarily, because when you go compression, the piston's coming up, and we're pushing on the air. I mean, we're contracting, we're squeezing the air. If we have a compromisation of the head gasket, typically it's only going to be bad when it's hot, when the engine's hot. If we can, we're going to put a little bit of compression of compressed air into the cooling system, and when you cranked it over and did your compression test, you should have the radiator cap off, and then all of a sudden, if you see bubbles coming out of the radiator neck, then you go, oh, okay. So this isn't a tough diagnostic one. Like I said, pressure test it, get it hot, pull the spark plugs, crank it over, and one of them cylinders is going to puke water.
So is this water going right out the muffler then?
Yes, it's going right out the tailpipe.
And when I pulled the plugs on it, I had one plug that the hole, you know where you gap it, was completely closed. Would the water do that to a plug?
Whew. No.
I mean, the plug was, it was missing so bad, and I took all the plugs out. One plug, the gap was already, it was completely closed, and they weren't even that old a plug.
Okay, I have never seen those two together. I'm thinking out loud here. I wonder if we broke a big piece of carbon off, and the big piece of carbon was in the center of the piston, and all of a sudden the piston came up to top dead center, and that big piece of carbon collapsed that spark. But it's not the miss you have, because the miss you have goes away after you run it for a minute or two. So this gap spark plug should not have been part of that, and if it is, then I'm going to withdraw my whole diagnosis about a head gasket blown.
No, I changed the plug, and it'll miss at low speed, but boy, when you get it on the freeway, that thing it hauls ass. There's no problem.
But I want it to go away. I want to be specific. You start it up cool in the morning, and when you start it up, it's missing. And if you sit there and rev it up, within the first minute or two, it idles smooth for the rest of the day. And that's because we got to get the water out of that cylinder, because when you shut the engine off, the coolant system still has 15, 16 pounds of pressure. So it's going to puke water into the cylinder, and it's going to stay there until you start it. So I want to set the spark plug stuff apart, but you still need a pressure test to determine where the water leak's going, because obviously this started out with a gallon and a half of coolant that you're missing on your 04 Silverado. Anyway,
if you do one head, do you have to do both of them?
No, you don't have to. It just depends on what the first head looks like, because it's going to be representative of the second head. Thank you very much, John. Jason, please stay there. I'll get you on the other side of the break. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Okey-dokey, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. It's July 18th of 2020, and I'm supposed to put that in there every once in a while. And we've got two lines available, but Jason, Walt, and David are first, so we're going to go do Jason because I should have got him the last break. Jason, you're first. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much for asking.
All right. I love your show, by the way. And
thank you.
First time I've been able to actually call you with an issue my son and I are having on his car.
Okay.
It's an 05 Subaru WRX STI. And it's 145,000 miles. He's got a Cobb tuner and everything. And we're showing a dead cylinder on number one.
Okay.
Now, we did the typical switch the coil packs, and it still showed that cylinder. So I pulled the spark plug out. Spark plug was wet with fuel. Did a spark test on it, and it's not throwing any spark to that cylinder. So I did the $8 plug and see if you're getting any spark. I'm kind of at a loss of where I need to go from here.
Well, this is a difficult one because I'm going to look at this problem through your eyes. And here, let me think out loud. We got, whenever you have a dead miss, we got spark fuel compression. So it's not fuel because you said the plug's wet.
Yes.
It's going to be tough for me to think it's spark because you swap coil packs. The only thing maybe you haven't swapped is the spark plug. And so maybe
I did not try that. I did a quick compression test on it, and the car's still firing over and running on three cylinders. So when I did that compression test, I got 90 PSI. So, and then I did kind of a leak down test. I wasn't exactly sure the exact way to do it, but it didn't just instantly leak down.
Okay. Well, there's specifications for something. There's. I mean, you have to have done 100 of those before you recognize good from bad. So chances of you two coming to that conclusion are slim and none. With respect to a compression test, you can't just do one cylinder. You don't have any comparison. So on your, you should have done three or four. So and okay, and then so when you do a compression test, there's two things. Number one, you got to have your foot to the floor. You got to have the ignition system disabled.
You got to have the throttle body.
Okay.
And throttle body open.
Okay. And then you have to have the same amount of cranking. So it's like three, what we call three rumra. It's runna, 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 something like that. So you're on the right track. It's just I need to just refocus you because it's sparker fuel on the miss. And what confuses me is the black gas. And hopefully you smelled it and it is gas and it's not coolant because it'll look the same. So if it's coolant, then there's your dead miss. But if it's gas and you smell it, then I think the next thing you should do is you've already done some of the preliminaries pretty good. Swap the spark plug.
Okay. Is that car take specific spark plugs?
Yes. I mean, specific as much as anything else. All the guys with the WRXs think that we have to put gold-plated spark plugs because this car will go to the moon as long as the atmosphere is right, and it'll beat Corvettes, and it does all this fancy stuff. And so, yes, when you go down to the auto parts store and the three-whiskered kid's in front of you, he's going to want to sell you the spark plugs that are $50 a piece. If I were you, I'd probably look for some Bosch or some Champion that's applicable in the spark plug book. That's what I would do. 10-4?
Okay.
Thank you very much, Jason. And Walt, you're up next. How can I help you, Walt?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. Can you guys hear me? Okay, I'm in my car. I'm on my Bluetooth.
Yes, sir. You're fine.
Okay, so I have a 2012 Volkswagen CC, a 2.0 TSI motor. And it's been one thing after another with this engine. But I had the fuel injectors replaced, spark plugs replaced, and my fuel pump replaced. And about a week after the fuel pump had replaced, I step on the gas, and I could tell I have to put the pedal almost halfway down before it actually will kick in. You understand? It's kind of hard to explain. So I'm trying to figure out if it's a transmission problem or is it still a fuel problem.
Well, and you have to drive it. I can't answer that without driving it. But you're describing a major hesitation. So you hit the throttle, and there's a big blah, and then it goes. So the question is somebody's got to go drive it and tell you what the heck they think it is. It's going to be easy for me to drive it and tell you, and there's a whole lot of guys out there that are better than I am. So it's just really a matter of and there's some testing that has to be done. Is the fuel pressure dumping or dropping? Are we losing the ignition system when we do that? Is the throttle position sensor giving the right throttle angle so that it, on a 1 through 5 scale, 1 is idling and 5 is wide open? You hit the throttle, it should be saying 3. The computer then adds fuel for 3, adds timing for 3. But guess what? The computer sees 1. So you give it the gas, and the computer doesn't know that you gave it the gas. And so there's all these dynamics that have to be looked at. What do you have a garage you like?
I'm sorry?
Do you have a garage that you like?
I really don't, man. I actually listen to y'all almost every – I listen to the Patriot a lot, and I listen to y'all because y'all very knowledgeable of what you guys are talking about. So,
well, I'm good at guessing. Okay, but here's the deal. I'm only as good as the – it's kind of a computer. If junk in is junk out, and if it's good – and so that's why it's a give and take, and you've done a good job with that. It's I ask questions and you answer them. But what part of town do you live in? And I'll suggest a repair shop that can handle your car.
I live 19th Avenue in Southern.
Okay.
Those are the main corner streets, so like South Phoenix.
Okay.
I'm willing to travel. I mean.
Okay. I don't have anybody south of the river in Phoenix, we're on Warner and I-10, so my last name is Salem. You shouldn't have any trouble finding us, and I know that we could answer your question, and that is, why do I have this bad hesitation? And the only thing I want you to answer is it always cold, is it always hot, or is it very random? That's going to help us. So if you want, then call and make an appointment, and you can say to them, I'd like to wait for an hour or so and then see what kind of, if you can pull a diagnosis out in that period of time. But then you need to have plan B, and that's how you're going to get home or whatever. And don't have your wife and your girlfriend pick you up at the same time because we hate those kinds of lobby fights, okay? Okay.
Right.
Thank you, Walt. Thank you very much. David, you stay right there because you're first.
Wow.
Well, it's 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Jason, actually David, is our next caller. I got a little business to take care of. We have four lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you live up near I-17 in Deer Valley and you don't have a garage, may I suggest Action Auto Repair, northwest corner, I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. He's been in business since 1983. He's very good. He's very honest. He's very dependable. His technicians are ASE Master Certified Technicians, and he has that process down. We listen. We ask questions. We determine what path to take. We get your permission. We fix the car. Then we verify we fix the car, and we make sure that we come in at or under the estimate. That's what Action Auto is well known for. David, what can we do for you?
Yeah, I have a question. Thank you for taking my call, first of all. I have a 2008 Kia Sorento with 150,000 miles on it. What are the cons, or what do you need to watch out for when you take your vehicle in to a shop to get the transmission flushed?
There's two different things. Has it ever been dealt with in before?
I believe it hasn't, no.
Okay. I think what I would do is I would – this is the front counter conversation that I think it should be. David, I don't want to flush it this time. I want to pull the pan off of it because it's going to shed metal, and it really should have been done at 100,000. And so what I want to do is I want to do the filter, and I want to do the fluid, and I want to look in the pan for any snap rings or any problems. Now, there's a little bit out of debris I expect to see. Now, I'm only going to do about a third, maybe a fourth of all the fluid in there, but I want to do that first. Now, if you want to come back in 25,000 miles or 20,000, then I'll do the flush, but I know the pan's already clean, and I know the filter's already new. So in my case, my customers, I'd like to see them at 80 and do the pan and the filter, and then maybe at 125, let's flush it. And then we just repeat that process all over again at every 100,000 miles. That's how I would handle it.
Okay, yeah. Is there a shop you recommend up in North Phoenix, North Deer Valley, Peoria?
Yeah, Action Auto there, Deer Valley and I-17, northwest corner. He's a really good guy. And he's right there in your ballpark. So Action Auto, I-17, and Deer Valley, the northwest corner. Tom's been around a long time. Okay?
So I would go in there, and I'd ask him to do what?
You would go in there and say, I've got 150,000 miles on my transmission. I've never had the pan off. I'm thinking I want to pull the pan and do the filter first, and then maybe the question to you, Mr. Garage, is when do we come back and do the full flush? Because I'd like the filter and the pan to be together, and then the flush. You see, we just need to see what's inside before we change all the fluid. Because if you've got snap rings in there and all kinds of ground up metal, then why am I going to flush it? Because your transmission's on its last legs.
Gotcha. So, okay, I got one more question.
Okay.
This is about door lock noise, the actuator.
Okay.
The chatter.
Okay. The question is can you change the chatter if you rough house the switch? I want you to bury that switch. I want you to use your strongest finger, and I want you to hit it hard.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll try that.
And here's why. 150,000 miles, and your car's an 08, so it's 12 years old. The idea is that the number one problem with doors and windows and locks is always the driver's side, or the driver's switch. It's called the master switch.
It started on the driver's side door, but now I'm hearing it on the passenger side rear door when I do the key deal.
Okay.
To unlock the lock.
We just have to, that's part of the diagnostic process. We just have to figure out if it's one or all, and if it's related to the master switch. That's why I want you to rough house the master switch. If you write me back and you say, hey, when I rough house that, I push that switch really hard like I'm poking the eyes out of a coyote, then everything's fine. Or my wife has got her finger in my ear because I've been acting up. So everything's fine, but then if I just, then I get a ratchet. Because it's not likely that you've got two door lock activators acting up at the same time. It's more likely that we have a master switch problem. And when we do a master switch, it's going to cost you a little bit of money.
Okay, well, I think I can switch it out, but I try to do whatever I can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I can... find stuff on the internet, children's book or whatever, this and that. And I try to do it myself first. But,
okay. Well, here's the risk is if you're wrong, you're going to spend $500 for a master switch or thereabouts. So I think that if you can make it different by manhandling the master switch, then I think that my diagnosis is 80 to 85% correct. Now, okay, if I took it off and I looked at the back of it and I saw some terminals that were hot, or I saw some melted plastic on the plug into the master switch, then I would fix that first.
Okay, there we go. There we
okay?
go.
Okay. All right. Good luck, David. Thank you very much.
Okay.
You bet. Okay, let me tell you about another good shop in the Sun City area, Auto Dynamics. Been around since 1982. Chuck is the owner with his son, Derek. Chuck and Derek are good people. I've known Chuck since 1968. And he was a little rambunctious in 1968, but at the same age he was, so was I. So there's nothing bad about Chuck. It's just that when we were younger in the old gas station days, we were just a little rambunctious. Nevertheless, Auto Dynamics has really great staff, great mechanics, and Derek says that he doesn't pay a commission or a percentage of your repair bill because he can insure that no one sells you unnecessary parts and repairs. So if you're in the Sun City area and you're looking for a good auto repair shop, Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. Okay, we got anybody else right now?
Phone lines are open.
Phone lines are open, 602-508-0960. We have five lines available. If you call in, Gil's going to answer the phone. Give him your name and a quick idea of what we're talking about, and then he'll whisper in my ear, and I'll take your call. When it comes to car repair, the biggest mistake you can make, ladies, is let your husband tell the shop what to do. Now, obviously, if it's something that, you know, the upper radiator hose blew off, then yeah, that's easy. Open the hood, it's kind of show and tell. But to have the husband tell the shop that he wants the transmission valve body replaced because when he went to Google, they said that if you have this code, then this will fix it. Google and all the rest of those search engines are only right 5% of the time, I promise you. There's example after example after example that I've experienced where somebody brings in a car and they've done three or four sensors, a mass airflow, an oxygen sensor, a throttle position sensor, a fuel pressure regulator, and it still hasn't fixed their car. So this is what my response is. At least now we know what it isn't. That's all we got. That's all we got. So it's a huge waste of money because the diagnostic process, the $85 to $150 you're going to pay to have it diagnosed appropriately and 100% sure is a whole lot less than all the parts I just mentioned. You'll spend more for a mass airflow sensor than I'm going to charge you to diagnose it, me, my industry. So who we got?
We have Dave.
Dave, good morning. What is it I can do for you?
Morning, Mark. This is your buddy from the west side.
Okay.
That you always give a bad time.
Dave, M-E-L.
Yes, you okay. Got it.
I know you. So what did I do wrong?
I'm still... Hey, you're right on the button.
Okay.
I'm still driving my 97 Olds 88.
Okay.
With less than 130,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And when I want to have the air conditioner blowing, I turn on the control knob on the dashboard and then set the speed of the blower. The fan.
Okay.
This is really bad at this time of the year. Occasionally, it just stops blowing.
Okay.
And then when I shut it off and let it sit maybe overnight, I can start it up and it'll work.
Okay. Do you know where the fan blower, do you know where the blower motor is located? Is it underneath the hood in front of the passenger, or is it near the feet of the passenger?
You know, I don't know.
Okay. It's going to be one of those two places. You're going to take a hammer, and the next time it doesn't blow, you leave the key on, you leave the motor running, and you put it on number 3. Not number 4, but number 3. fan speed 3. Then you take the hammer and you gently hit the back of the blower motor, not enough to dent the case, but you hit it and listen. And if it automatically comes on, then the blower motor's bad and the brushes are bad and you need to replace it. And okay. if it's underneath the hood, then the tomato can is sticking there where you can just touch it with a hammer. And then I want you to rough house the switches on the dashboard, the climate control switches. And if you say on the blower, if I take it from low to high, hard, ooh, ooh, up, down, and all of a sudden starts working. But there's a difference, Dave, between 1, 2, and 3 and 4. 1, 2, and 3 are on a resistor. And 4 isn't. So I need you to identify where the problem lies. Is it speed 1, 2, and 3? Is that where the problem's at? Or is it only on high? That makes a difference.
4 never works.
Okay, and if it never works, then it really is a matter of somebody's got to get it to never work and find out we got power coming from the fuse panel, goes through the air conditioning panel, goes through a resistor, and then goes to the blower motor. Where are we missing power? That's it. So I'm going to tell you.
I have found that if I give the dashboard a good slam with my fist, that sometimes corrects it.
Okay. Then the question is it over the climate control? Because maybe we have a bad connection at the back of the climate control, or is it further over to the right front corner where the passenger sits? The banging will help us determine where it's at. So you're going to have to get your girlfriend, and when the blower quits working, you have her beat with her fist on the passenger side of the dashboard, and if the blower comes on, then the next time it doesn't, then you beat in the center part of the dashboard over the climate controls. If you can give us that 99% of the time this makes it work and this doesn't, then you've identified at least where the bad connection's at. Okay?
It also will come back on if I slam the door.
Okay, well, that sounds like a bad connection.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah.
I have a good friend from church who is a certified mechanic, and as a ministry, he has been keeping my car going, and so I'll give him these tips.
Okay. Well, if he's a certified mechanic, he doesn't need those tips, but yes, you can share those guesses with him. Because that's what we're doing, is we're kind of guessing based on. So junk in is junk out, but in your particular case, I have enough faith in your ability to give me the information I need. And you helped me because I was waiting for, I hit the dash or I slammed the door hard and the blower comes on. Well, it's not likely to be the blower, it's likely to be a bad. But, again, there's a difference between speed 1, 2, and 3 and 4. So leave it on 1, 2, or 3 and slam your door
when
it doesn't work. And then the question is, Mark, what? It doesn't come back on. But when I go to high, it does come back on. So that makes a big difference. That's going to save you some money in a normal arena. But anyway, Dave, got to run, but thank you very much. Thank you very much. Okay, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. We're going to take about a 3.5-minute break, then we're going to come back. 602-508-0960. This is a give-and-take show. This is, tell me what you're making, model, and the mileage. Let's talk about the symptoms. I'm not interested in what the guy at Google said. We don't know if he's a farmer. We don't know if he's an air conditioning guy. We don't know if he sells cars for a living. We don't know if he's a doctor or a veterinarian or even a gynecologist. We don't know. The idea that he can fix your car repair problem over the radio or over the phone is about as ridiculous as I can. But I know what to ask you. And unless he's really, like me, a master tech all these years, he doesn't. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we have another hour of fun and frivolity, 602-508-0960. Let me talk about Kurtz Auto Repair, and we're going to get to our three callers. Kurtz is proud to be an independent, family-owned and operated auto repair facility at I-17 and Bell Road, northeast corner. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians. He has been around a long time. He does both domestic and imports, and he opened his doors, like I said, in 1987. I've sent cars to him like I have all of their other best shops on my website, marksalem.com. And him, like the rest, they can fix your car. So if you're in that area of I-17 and Bell, Kurtz Auto would be a good place to go if you don't already have a place that you love. Let's go to the phones, and we're going to go to Bob. Bob, thanks for holding through the break. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. The onboard computer on my 07 Malibu tells me I'm getting 33.8 miles per gallon. But when I figure it out with pad and pencil, I'm only getting 28.5.
You know, your car was born just a week after Fred Flintstone. And I want to tell you, this is something that comes up a lot. But unfortunately, it's just an algorithm and it's just a big guess. I don't have an answer for your problem, but I'll tell you what I would do. I would disconnect the battery cables both. I would touch the cables together, not the terminals, but the cables together. I would let it sit for 15, 20, 30 minutes, go inside, do whatever, put it all back together, reset your clock, and see what happens. So we're going to reset. We're going to reboot. But it's not uncommon. My truck every once in a while will give me some stupid reading like 40 miles to the gallon and it's a one-ton truck. I know this thing's 15 to 17 miles per gallon and every once in a while for whatever reason. So I don't have an answer for you, and I'll tell you something else. I don't have a fix for you either, and my suggestion is don't worry about it because it may or may not be related to a repair down the road. So all of a sudden you're dropping the speedometer or the speedometer's given a bad signal, and you'd normally see that in your instrument panel, but if not, then obviously that can cause it. So you call back and say, hey, Mark, the speedometer gear in the transmission was half-stripped. They put that in there, and now my fuel economy reading is back to normal. So really and truly, Bob, don't do anything on this. Just this isn't a safety issue. You could spend a whole lot of money guessing, and so here, let me change your question. Mark, have you ever fixed something like this? And the answer is no. The answer is no. So somebody's going to be guessing. They're going to be guessing with your money.
Thanks.
All righty. Thank you. Thank you very much. All righty. Adam, you're next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I got a question about a 2018 Toyota Tundra. I want to flush the transmission fluid out like I have in my other trucks where I took the line off the radiator, stuck it in a bucket, and dumped it in, turned the truck on, and watch it all go through the system. But I don't have a dipstick on my Tundra. It's a sealed transmission. So what are my options?
Well, you have to find the procedure to find out when it's full, and that's not really how we flush it. We have machines that we hook to both lines, and so we're pushing new in and then we're flushing old out. So we're actually using fresh to flush out old, and it takes two or three extra quarts in order to do it that way. But there is a procedure to determine when your transmission is full. Sometimes you might have to remove fluid, but not often, and other times you might have to add fluid, but just find the procedure on finding out when your truck is full. But with you're running it dry, and I'm not running it dry when I'm feeding new into the suck line, and on the poop line, I'm giving old. It's a big difference there. So I'm scared that if you let it run too long and it's sucking air, that you might have a problem that would be related to that, but in reality, it's not going to happen. It's slim and none. So why not just ask somebody, have you ever had it? How many miles are on it?
It's 50,000. It's never been serviced. But I just like to remove the fluid at 50 because of the heat. I know it probably lasts for 100,000, but
it's a synthetic fluid.
I just like
fluid.
To keep clean fluid in it. You know?
I know.
Yeah.
It's not.
Is there any difference in the synthetic?
Oh, heck yes. First of all, you can change the fluid every day for that transmission. It's not going to love you anymore. And if that transmission is going to fail at 141,000 miles, it's going to fail whether it has new transmission in it every mile since then. It's not going to make any difference. A synthetic fluid oxidation, that's when the oil turns to a solid, black solid. A synthetic fluid has a much higher oxidation point. you can take it up to 500 degrees and it's not going to oxidize and it will still provide lubrication. The problem is the rest of the transmission can't handle 500 degrees. So even though the fluid will protect you, the rest of the transmission is going to go to heaven. So, but it, a synthetic is better, and you're changing yours when it's a synthetic still has a lot of life left in it. So I know that you want to work on your car, but why don't we do something other than that? Just figure out something else to do that benefits it. You know, rotate the tires. How about we, you know, take the big mirrors off and put smaller mirrors for better fuel economy? Why don't we have the windows tinted? That kind of stuff. You know, you're welcome to do what you want to do, but I'm just, look it, even though I'm a cowboy, I'm a nature lover, and I'm an environmentalist, and I'm going to write your name down as Adam with the 18 Tundra that is wasting natural resources, and he's depriving my family good transmission fluid because he's taken more than he deserves, and of course I'm kidding you. So,
Is transmission fluid basically hydraulic fluid? I mean, when I dump hydraulic fluid in a tractor, it doesn't care what I put in it. Is hydraulic and transmission fluid about the same thing?
Yes, somewhat. We don't want to give people, this is not a question you ask in public, we don't want to give people the idea that they can interchange the two because they do have different properties. But the answer is transmission fluid is made for clutches and made for heat and made for cold. Yes, putting a hydraulic fluid from your tractor into your transmission is not a good idea, although they both have the same kind of job. So I want to leave that alone. And you know what? On that Tundra, you could probably go ahead and lift it, put some big tires on it, and then have a tractor pull with your tractor. You know, see what happens.
Yeah, I don't take it off-road, man.
okay.
No off-road.
All righty. I'm going to go, but thank you very much. Thank you very much. Larry, you're up next. How can I help you?
I love your show, by the way. First time I heard it today.
Oh, well, thank you.
Are you on Saturdays only?
My wife would kill me if I did more. Saturdays 10 to 12, every Saturday, 51 weeks a year, and that covers 1 week I want off because somebody invited me.
Wow.
Okay.
You should take two weeks.
I know. Okay. My wife says that.
Here's my problem. I have a 2016 Toyota Corolla. It's a good car, except I have 116,000 miles on it right now. And I do a lot of driving, and I do a lot of idling. And I have two problems with my car right now. One of them is a major fuel problem. Engine light comes on, and if I stop the car, then, of course, the engine light's off right now. You know, check engine light. It's off now. It comes off and on for the past week, and I was going to get it fixed, but I got really depressed, and I didn't want to do anything, so anyone to take it to the shop and spend the money. A little short of cash right now anyway. So the engine light's off, but when I take the gas cap off, I turn the car off and take the gas cap off, you can hear the if the engine's running, you can hear gurgling like water, like gas, like water, you know, going down a river or something. And then if the engine's off, I put gas in it, it won't start right away. It cranks for about 15 seconds before it starts, and then it'll stall, and then it'll crank again, and it'll stall, and then it'll finally run. And,
Hold on. Do you stuff the gas tank, let me change it. Does your wife stuff the gas tank?
No.
Okay. Well, stuffing the gas tank is click, 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 click on the gun. You're describing a situation where we're overfilling the gas tank and we're running fluid through the evaporative system where we're supposed to suck the fumes off the tank and burn them through the engine, but we filled the tank too full and we're running raw fluid forward and it takes forever. And if you take a look in your rearview mirror when it finally does start, there's going to be a puff of black smoke. If that's the case, and then when you take the cap off and the keys in your pocket, sometimes you hear a hiss. That's normal. Okay? That's normal. So in this particular case, now the check engine light is yellow for a reason, and that's caution. If it's got a red light, it means stop. But a check engine light is caution, so you can afford to wait for that. But the real issue is it takes a while to start, only and it's related to the fueling part of it, and there's a good chance that you, and now if you're stuffing the tank and then we have the evaporative system go down and we're running really rich after you start it up, then if you stop flushing the tank or pumping the tank too full, then after a while the check engine light, if it's related, will stop going on, and you fixed it just by changing your habits. So
right. Also, one other thing.
Okay.
Well, what happened was I took the battery cables off about three times in a week because I had a little bit of electrical problem that I wanted to fix on the battery and alternator, and I had to tighten up the alternator belt. And I replaced the alternator. And when I did that, it reset to factory settings, and the range said 377 miles per tank. And normally it always says 253 the way I drive the car. And that's when the engine light, check engine light came on, started coming off and on.
Okay. No, we're not going to work on those two together. One has nothing to do with the other. And when you boot the computer and you take the cables off like you did, we start over. So the computer's going to say 330 until it gets some history. After it sees you run through two or three tanks of fuel, and after it sees how fast you're going and how you start and all that kind of stuff, then it will adjust that. So I'm not worried about that. If you want to worry about it, you can, but I'm not going to worry about that. I think the biggest problem you got is that one, you got an engine code, and the engine code isn't going to tell you what's wrong. It just tells you what state the problem's in. So, but if my advice is still the same, if you're
it says it's running lean by the code.
Okay, all right. Well, running lean can be a lot of things. An EGR stuck open, the O2 sensor's stuck lean, the fuel pressure regulator's wide open. There's so many different things. Okay, I got to run. But anyway, good luck to you, Larry. Thank you very much, Walt. You're up next. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you about Strictly Diesel Service and Repair up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate's been on my radar screen for many, many years. He has shown me time and time and time again that he has two important traits when it comes to working on cars. He's honest, actually three. He's dependable, and he really knows diesels. So if you've got a diesel problem, Ford, Chevy, Dodge, whatever, light duty, and so this is foreign and domestic light duty trucks compared to the big trucks, the semis, then I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, open Monday through Friday, and they sell parts 24 hours a day online at their website. He's good. Symptoms. Remember, we tell him symptoms, and then we ask him for an estimate based on our symptoms. What's it going to cost you to find it? The best you can hope for, it's $125 to find it, and then he calls back and says it's a dollar to fix it because it was a bad connection, it was a line that came off, or something like that. So, Nate's good. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Let's go to the phones. Ken, good morning. Thank you for holding.
Hi, Mark. Great show. Love you every Saturday morning.
Thank you.
I have a question regarding shops. I live out in Surprise. Several years ago, I used Thunderbird Auto. Bought a new car, got 3 years of free service. That has now run out. And I noticed that T-Bird is no longer on the list. What happened? And if not them, who out here in Surprise?
Okay. All right. Tom Fletcher and I were friends for more than 20 years. And Tom retired, and he sold his two facilities. He sold the first facility on the Thunderbird Road. He sold it to his lead technician. The shop can't stay on my list because I need 5 years of experience for the shop owner to have. So the person that Tom sold his shop to, his lead tech, has to wait that long. I've had no complaints about that Thunderbird Auto on Thunderbird you're talking about. You are certainly free to use that shop, and I would suggest that and S&S Tire would be your two places in Surprise that would be able to handle your maintenance for you.
S&S Tire can do regular maintenance?
Yes, sir. They can do oil changes and cooling system flushes, that kind of stuff. They do tires, obviously, and brakes, but they do general repair and general maintenance as well. But they're a tire store, but they're very good at what they do, but they also do maintenance and repair.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, you betcha. Thank you very much. Okay, 602-508-0960. Water lines are wide open. So now if you want to call in, it's five lines and they're open. Gil, I can hear him snoring, but he will wake up when the phone rings. And he's also the one that keeps me on track and keeps me on time and all that other kind of stuff. I have a confession to make, Walt. Walt, you called in, and I told you, you told me, I think you were at 19th Avenue and Baseline, and I told you I didn't have anybody north of the river. Well, I want to reconsider that. And then I directed you to my shop on I-10 and Warner Road, and it's my name is Salem, and it's, then that's the name of our shop. North of the river in your area is 25th Street Auto and Martin's Auto Repair. Now, they're on the street side of Central Avenue, but they're probably shorter distance than I am. So remember, Martin's Auto and 25th Street Auto. Martin's Auto is run by Dave Martin, and his father was a friend of mine back in the 70s, Dennis. He's still around, but he's retired, and turn it over to David. 25th Street Auto is run by Billy. And Billy is really good at what he does. He knows how to run a shop. He's honest and dependable. So, Walt, if you're listening, Martin's Auto or 25th Street Auto, either one of those guys could help you out with your particular problem. When it comes to civic duty, may I ask that you just simply vote this election? I don't care who you vote for. I'm just asking you to vote. Let's all do our part to vote. And you have no idea how important that is to the system. And so I would prompt you, and like I said, I don't care what party you're in, just vote. Let's get a good representation of all the people in the United States, and let's all do our part to vote. Plus, when you vote, you have all the local contests and all the state and representatives and senators and all that other kind of stuff. So you should have a hand in that. You don't have to tell anybody how you voted. So if the person you voted for turns out to be, there's no other way to say it, they're a turd, then no one's going to know you voted for them unless you tell somebody. But most of the time, the general electorate ends up electing the best man or woman. I'm not supposed to do politics, but I'll tell you this much. I've been around the block more than once, and to be perfectly honest with you, most of the time when there's a male and a female, and I don't know either one of them, I normally both vote the female because I think it takes a heck of a lot more money to buy the female's integrity than it does most of my friends. So I've worded that very carefully. And I'm not saying all the men in the world, most of my friends. So I want to pass that on. It's really important that when you're told that you need car repair work, especially if it has to do with something that starts or has the word flush in it, as far as I'm concerned, those are used to flush your wallet. That's what they're good for. But here's the question. Man or woman or whoever. So I say, Mr. Salem, we looked your car over. We changed your oil as you requested. But really and truly, I think I can improve your performance and your fuel economy because you just really need to have your injectors flushed. And while we're there, we're going to flush your fuel pressure regulator, and we're going to clean up the back of your valves, and we're going to do all this other kind of stuff. And yes, that's $199, but it's really going to be worth it. And that's something I think you would benefit from. And you say, well, thank you for that, Taylor. Let me ask you a question. What symptoms do I presently have that you're going to fix with this flush? And I want to tell you something, that question is just a killer. That question is so tough to answer for two reasons. Number one, the person in front of you typically is a service writer, and they're not real technical. So if they start babbling, then you'll know that's babbling. They don't know what they're talking about. Number two, the technician told them they needed it, and they didn't ask the technician that symptom issue. So my suggestion to you is the default is, why don't you write down exactly what I need and staple your business card to my copy of the receipt, and I will consider your suggestion. Most of the time that will never happen because the suggestion has no merit. So even if 50% of the time that written document along with the stapled business card won't happen, 50% of the time is the conclusion you can draw is it wasn't needed. So self-defense for car expense, that's what I'm all about. And even though I've been in the business for a very long time, since I started in a gas station in 1968 and I opened my first garage in 1979, I can tell you, yeah, I'm in that industry. And I do know that there's a small percentage of shops out there that play by different rules than the rest of us do. So self-defense for car expense has everything to do with giving you information that helps you defend yourself from the people in our industry that are really only working to flush your wallet. They just want you to spend a bunch of money for services that may take 15 to 20 to 30 minutes that are very, very lucrative, very profitable, and no risk at all. Otherwise, no one's going to come back and say, you flushed my injectors in the back of my valves and it didn't do anything for me. No one does that. And then the response might very well be, well, you have no idea if we cleaned up the back of your valves because there's no way to know that. But I assure you that we cleaned the back of your valves. Huh. But I still don't have any symptoms and you haven't fixed anything. So I would like you to reconsider that charge. Now, that's a nice way to say, I'd like a refund. It's at this point that you'll figure out if that shop really has your best interest at heart. Because most of our front counter staff has the ability to make you happy.
Time for a break.
But it's a tough call. We'll be back. You know, when it comes to car repair shops in the Valley, I would love to have one on every corner, or maybe a shop every mile. But unfortunately, most of the people that apply are simply missing an important part of my checklist. That doesn't mean they're bad. Maybe they haven't been in business 5 years. I don't know. But Thompson's Auto Repair is the only shop in Mesa that I can tell you with total certainty that you'll be happy. Brian and Thelma have families that date back to the 60s and the 70s. Both of their families have been in the gasoline retail sales as well as car repair. They both come from families that know the difference from right and wrong. So they're on Main Street just east of Stapley, been around a very long time. I think they opened that shop in 1970. So if you're in Mesa, it might be an extra mile drive, but Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street just east of Stapley is a great place to start your look. Lenny, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for the call.
You bet.
I have an 02 Buick LeSabre, and I have a driver's information center there that gets you to things like engine temperature, oil pressure, and so forth. But when I get the one for battery, it comes out at 14.4 volts. Isn't that awful high? Is that dangerous? Could that burn up something there in my car with that high 14.4 volts?
Nope. Okay. Here, let me explain. A 12-volt battery is fully charged at 13. So let's move that 12 to 13. The alternator is going to enhance that. It's not uncommon for us to have 13.8 to 14.5. It's just not uncommon. Now, what I'd want to do is I would want you to ask your shop the next time you have an oil change, can you just put a voltmeter on it? And I'm going to go to my driver's information center, and you just stick a voltmeter on my battery, and let's see if they're both the same.
Okay.
So what happens if they're at 14.1 and you're at 14.5? Well, somewhere along the line, and who cares? I mean, I wouldn't spend a dime on that. And then I'd look at the top of the battery, and you see if you overcharge a battery, it almost always gases, so there's going to be this splattering of liquid all over the top of the battery as if somebody sneezed on it five times. And so you touch that, and you leave it on your finger for a little while. It starts to burn. You put your fingers underneath the water. You rinse it off. That's battery acid. Another thing you haven't said anything about is if you said to me, intermittently the headlights go bright and dim, then that's a bad ground. And a bad ground will cause an overcharging system. And so watch for that symptom.
They're constant.
So that's not something I'd really worry about. But you can go buy a digital voltometer or just an analog voltometer from Walmart, and you can do your own tests. So what we want to do is we want to start the car, hold the idle up for about a minute, get out, make sure we don't have any accessories on, and then just touch the positive and negative to your voltmeter. And like I said, if there's a difference between the two, the one that's at the battery is just more correct than the one on your driver information center. That's not something I'd spend any money on. If you brought that car to me, I wouldn't let you spend any money on that, because you don't have any of the – you're right, an overcharge condition could occur, but there's lots of symptoms that you left out. So
I was thinking there's a voltage regulator that regulates it to be a voltage. Doesn't that just come into play, a voltage regulator?
Yes, it could very well be a voltage regulator, but there's no problem right now to fix. If my truck – and I know my truck's going to run 14.5. So I don't care, and I want to give you comfort. And you didn't say that you burn out any light bulbs. You didn't say that you have the acid smell. You didn't say that – I mean, all the things I want to see and hear, you didn't say. So at this particular point, I'm 99% sure you're okay.
Okay.
All righty.
Mark, thanks for taking my –
You bet.
And stay safe out there. Stay safe out there.
I am. I'm 10 feet from my wife. I'm telling you, I'm 10 feet from my horses. I'm 10 feet from some of the cowboys around me. I just put the whole paper bag over my head and cut eye holes, because I figure there's no way they're going to be able to get past the paper bag. And with eye holes, but the only problem is I got kicked out of Walmart. They wouldn't let me come in with a paper bag over my head because they said that it might scare people. But yeah, I think the paper bag is better than the mask. Besides, they can't see in it with a mask. They can't see a smile anyway. So if I have a paper bag, they don't know if I'm smiling or not. So anyway, it's not a good idea to follow Mark Salem, because oftentimes I'm way out there in left field. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be back right after this. Automatic transmission exchange has been around a long time, and Phil does a good job. He's on Washington and 40th Street on the north side of the road. He's been around since 1968, and Phil got his start when automatic transmissions came out. So he understands the fundamentals of automatic transmissions. And we used to control the shifts with a cable or with vacuum. Today we use electronics to shift your car, but we still shift your car. So Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange is a good guy for you to take a look at. Have we got a caller?
We do. We have Brian.
Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How can I help you?
Ran into a little bit of a problem at a shop in the availability of a part.
Okay.
I have a 2000 Lexus GS400, and I've owned it for about a year. It was coding for a shift solenoid C.
Okay.
So I took it to a transmission shop over off Cave Creek that I've used before. And the one time I used them had good results, but this time was a little bit different. Had to take it a couple times to them. They seemed like they had a hard time finding the correct part for it.
Yeah.
Now, the last time they took it apart, they actually had both parts, the part they ordered and the part that they took out from my car, and it looked identical, except there was a small cylindrical, the guy called it a snout coming out of it, and the original, the new part, it barely came out of the solenoid, and the original part for my car was a little bit longer.
Okay.
He said that he checked with his supplier, who checked with his supplier, and good luck trying to find that part.
Okay. Well, first of all, you shouldn't be involved in this. This is his. So if you want to speed him up, you say, look, if you're convinced that this is the problem and you're going to repair it, then go ahead. If you don't repair it and I end up with the same symptoms, then I'm going to come back. And you'll have two choices. Give me all my money back or fix it right. So this is not your problem. Let me tell you what I'm thinking, though. I'm thinking the reason he can't find the first part number is because it's been superseded by another number, which happens all the time. So if you want to get involved, which I think is a bad idea, then get your VIN number out and call a couple of dealers and ask them about this solenoid, and you better know what transmission you have, but the VIN will tell them that too. And then you ask them about this particular shift solenoid and ask them what the part number is, and just tell them, I'm having a problem with my shop, and I'm unclear about the availability of this. Now, it could very well be, I'm guessing, I'm going to say it again, I'm guessing, it could very well be that they've already put that solenoid in and didn't fix your problem. So they're trying to buy some time by fibbing to you so that they have the car in again and they hopefully can do a better job. I don't know, but I want to tell you, this is not your problem. It's true that we're having problems getting car parts because a lot of the production lines have just shut down. So it's not uncommon. Well, in my time, I've never seen this happen, but then again, I've never been involved in a pandemic like we have right now. But there's a lot of people out there that are having a tough time getting parts, computer parts and car parts and dryer parts and for their washer and dryer and that kind of stuff. But this is theirs. So if they're sure that this is the problem, and it could be the superseded part number, and it may be a physically different, but that's their choice. Either they give you all your money back and put you back the way they found you, or you politely say, make a decision and let's see how it works. But that's
well, that's where I'm at, Mark, is I just had them put it back together because I kind of lost confidence in them being able to help me with my problem.
Did they charge you anything?
Well, I did ask them to do a transmission service, and which they did, but tried to charge me without fixing my original problem. So they actually walked that back and didn't charge me.
Okay, that's a good
after the diagnostic.
Okay, that's a good sign. That's a good sign.
Yeah,
I think that that's an honorable sign. Basically, they're saying we took your car a little longer than we should have, and we're going to compensate you by no charge in the transmission service. Now, I want to tell you, in my early days, there were times I got into this problem, and in my early days, I didn't know how to say we need a fresh pair of eyes on this. That's all there is to it. We need a fresh pair of eyes on this. So.
And well, that would probably be my next question is, I'm done with that shop. Who would be, can a regular shop do it or the transmission shop is the best way to go? And who would you recommend?
Well, two things. Have you got a code?
Or do you have a code.
Okay. And do you have a drivability shift problem? Or do you just have a code and no drivability problems? Or have you got a code and a drivability problem?
Well, it does seem that going maybe from second into third, I can't explain it, but I feel a little something.
Okay. I don't want to be the guy that works on that. I mean, let's wait till it gets worse and easier to find. I really think it's in your best interest. Here's what I will offer you. I want you to manual shift it for a couple days. Just you take control of it first, second, third, fourth, and then overdrive. And I want to know if it changes it. Because you manually, and then I want you to shift it early from first to second, and then I want you to hold it out till she's screaming, and then go to second. So I want you to take control of the shift pattern, and then let's see what the deal is. But that's a scary thing. When you have a symptom that the customer is concerned about, but it doesn't appear in your maintenance manual, and you get on, some of the websites that are specific to guys like me, and you throw it out there and say, hey, has anybody seen, a 2000 GS400 Lexus? Because I did write it down, that's why I'm hesitating there. And it's got a different shift in the 1-2 or the 2-3. Have you guys ever fixed that? Nobody's going to answer. Because it's just too wide open. Has anybody ever seen the windshield wipers change speeds from low to high? Sometimes they just seem to flap in the middle. That's right. Wait till it gets worse. You're far. How many miles are on this thing?
Right now about 197,000.
Okay. Has it ever had a transmission since then? Is that the original?
I don't believe. I just had it for a year. I don't believe so.
Okay. Well, let me put this in perspective for you. This transmission has been around the equator eight times. The equator's 25,000. Well, it's 24,888 miles, but if you'll let me round it off to 25. This thing's been around the girth of the earth 8 times. Let's not lose sight of that. So there's a lot of us that don't want to work on this very, very old horse, this very, very old man like me. We don't want to work on that for fear that we end up with a bad transmission. You came in with a sloppy, you know, 1-2 shift, and then all of a sudden it needs a tranny. So that kind of doesn't bode well for us. So in your particular, and besides that, if you got road service, you got towing behind you, and it wouldn't hurt you to drive it till the symptoms become more predominant. So, you know, that's what I would do if I were you. Okay?
Okay. And then do you have a transmission shop you could tell me about in Central Phoenix?
Yeah, Automatic Transmission Exchange. ATE is the acronym, Automatic Transmission Exchange. But you said you were up on Cave Creek, and you might call Blackwell over at 40th Street and Greenway and tell him Mark Salem said he doesn't have a prayer in hell of fixing this, but does he want to look at it? And that'll wind up his panties. And that's kind of like throwing the gauntlet, you know what I mean? But I'll tell you right now what he's going to do. Tom and I are the best of friends. We're both ornery, we're both ornery cusses. I think both of us, he's going to want to drive it. And if he drives it and he says what I said, then I didn't get to drive it, but if he drives it, I'm going to hang my hat with him. So, I'm scared you're going to spend a bunch of money on this and then 5,000 miles from now, this transmission is going to heaven. If you said to me, what's the life expectancy of most of the automatic transmissions in all the cars today? Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Toyota, and Honda. Those are the big five dogs right there. And my answer is very few of them are going to go past 150. So you're already in the 200 mark. So anyway, Brian, good luck to you, buddy. Thank you very much. When it comes to, we have another caller. Who might that be?
That would be Eddie.
Eddie, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 83 Chrysler, 5th Avenue.
Okay.
And I have play in the steering wheel. I was wondering if it's good to try to adjust it.
I bet it doesn't have a steering box. I bet this is a rack and pinion. I'm thinking. I've been wrong before.
Well, it's rear-wheel drive, not front-wheel drive. It's an 83 V8 engine.
Okay.
So it's automatic transmission.
All right. This is what most of us gray-haired guys would do. We would bring the car into the bay, and we would have somebody just grab the steering wheel with the engine running, and we would move his hand from 12 o'clock to 12:30, back to 12, to 11:30, back to 12. Otherwise, we're going to just move the steering wheel 3 widths of the hand. We're going to look underneath. Underneath, we're going to find some joint that's sloppy. Tie rod end, inner tie rod end, drag link, pitman arm, or it even might be in the steering box. If it is the steering box, there is an adjustment for it. If you get it too tight, you got to steer it all the time. And Eddie's going to go back to the shop and said, you fixed it, but I don't like how it drives. And so the guy's going to go, okay, I'll take a half a turn off my adjustment. But the play, you're assuming the play's in the steering box, and I'll tell you how to find out. Have your wife pop the hood and have your wife start the car up and just move the steering wheel left and right, 2 inches left, 2 inches right. You look at the steering box. The steering shaft comes in to one, and it'll be moving, but the pitman arm at the bottom of the steering box moves. So you tell her, don't turn the steering wheel more than 2 inches to the left and 2 inches to the right. You put your right hand on the steering shaft and your left hand on the pitman arm. And you close your eyes and she does that. If they both move in complete synchronization, it's not the steering box. If they don't move in synchronization, you might be able to adjust it. Now, sometimes if you're not good about putting your hands down there, just look at both of them. Just look at them. That's what we do. You're going to spend $25, $35 diagnostic to have somebody do that. But he's going to be a good guy, and he's going to know what he's doing. And he, and then if that's not it, and Eddie's wrong about this being a steering box, then I'm going to go ahead and find it. I'll find it, and then I'll give you a bid for it. So that's on a 1 to 10 scale, Eddie, this is a 2. This is a 2. To find it, this is a 2. So do you have a shop that you like?
Well, no, not really where I'm at.
What
I'm
part
in Sun City.
Okay, well then I'd go by Sun City Auto. Tell Derek that Mark Salem said that you would look at the play in your front end. Would you look at
the
play?
Where are they located?
They're on, hold on just a minute, because I just talked about them a minute ago. But I also talked about a lot of other places too. They're on, north side of Grand 99th Avenue. North side of Grand 99th Avenue. Now, another thing you can do, this is a little safer. Put your wife in the car, start it up, and turn your steering wheel left and right 2 inches. 2 inches left, 2 inches right. Are you with me so far?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then I want you to put your hand on one of the front tires and watch her steering wheel with your eyes. And as she moves the steering wheel left and right, 2 inches left, 2 inches right, that tire should move in complete synchronization. So let's pretend the driver's side tire works perfectly, but you go to the passenger side tire and she'll move the steering wheel back and forth and there's a delay. So it doesn't move incomplete. So your eyes are telling you one thing, you're watching the steering wheel, but your hands are telling you something else. Now, I'm going to charge you $217 to do that.
You got to jack it up off the ground, right?
No.
No?
No. Just put your right hand on the steering. Let's talk about the passenger side. Put your right hand on the tire and look at the steering wheel while she shifts the steering wheel back and forth. I need both front tires to move in complete synchronization of that steering wheel.
Okay. That's something I didn't know.
Yeah, that's how we do it.
I should try that.
Yeah. Now, you call me back next week and tell me what happened, would you please?
Okay, sure.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Eddie. You bet.
This was a paid program.
Continue, Mark.
Okay. I'm having a problem, and it's all my problem because we're off somewhere in the time. But I know my time's right and the station's wrong, or it's the other way around. But they just want me
to
keep talking. So I'll do that. Car repair is difficult. I think I've given you some tips to determine whether the shop you're in is doing a good job. And if you'll email me the name of your shop, I'm going to say two things. Number one, it's a shop I would send my mother to. I know the owner. I like the shop. Or number two, my mother used to say, if you don't have anything nice, then don't say anything. So I'm of that same opinion. Now, there's lots of shops out there that I don't know about, and I'll tell you that. I can't possibly know every shop in town. But I graduated from Tempe High School a long, long time ago. I've been a master technician, an ASC master technician, for more than 25 years. And so I'm no spring chicken, and I wasn't born yesterday. And I am really, really good at the 60s and the 70 cars. 80s, we went into something different.
One
and
minute.
90s was a whole new animal. And then, of course, today's computer cars. But if you understand the fundamentals, and if you understand how we accomplish our goals, then you can fix cars. One quick example. We use electronics on the new cars, and I want you to think about 5 volts. 1 volt, 2 volt, 3 volt, 4 volt, 5 volt. It's not this simple, but it's easy to explain. 1, the car is stopped. 5, the throttle is on the floor and the car is going really fast. So 1 is low and 5 is high. RPMs. 1 is low, 5 is high. Speed. 1 is low, 5 is high. Airflow. 1 is low, 5 is high. Really and truly, as long as you understand what the computer is seeing, then it's going to be a little easier to fix it. Mark at MarkSalem.com. Mark with a K at MarkSalem.com. Mark at MarkSalem.com. Give me your phone number so I can call you.